Sensitive and precise, iconic and gregarious, competitive, out front and in your face. It sounds like I'm talking about an eccentric athlete, right? Well, in a way, it describes the great trumpet of Freddie Hubbard. Now, when I spoke with Hubbard late last year, he was 70 at the time and promoting his final CD, On the Real Side. You're hearing a track from it now. But Hubbard seemed very unsettled by his inability to perform as he once did. So here's that conversation.
A lot of it, I don't have the chops. Because I used to play the head, I used to play the solos and all the shouts and all that. But so one of the guys, David Weiss, he plays trumpet. He says, I'll arrange this stuff. You give me the songs, and I'll arrange it so you don't have to play all the way through.
How big a deal is this for you, Freddie Hubbard? Is this sort of a moment of, you know, am I able to do and be what I once was, or am I having to accept that time has put me in a different place? Are you sort of at that stage?
I'm at that because, see, you have to realize that one time or another in your career, when you get a little older, you can't do the things that you did before. Now, it's been very hard for me to accept that. I always felt like I could blow it and never happen until this happened. So now it's no matter how hard I practice, it just seems like I can't do things I did. But people tell me, say, man, you don't have to prove nothing. All you have to do is play good enough to get your point across, because you're not gonna play like I did when you played those earlier records. And it's hard for me to accept that. You know, I don't want these young cats getting off on me, you know.
Let's go back to 1964. Mm-hmm. This is Breaking Point.
See, I was trying to play like a saxophone.
You did it.
Yeah, but I didn't realize the difficulty
of doing that.
Because you're not supposed to play the trumpet like that. By me getting with these saxophone players, I wanted to play like them, so.
You know, 1964, you were hot. You were on fire. What was it like at that time to be Freddie Hubbard, the star, the headliner?
You know, I was there and I was in competition. Competition with Lee Morgan, Bill Hardiman, Donald Byrd, all these guys were there, and it was a test. I mean, every time you played, you were being watched, and people compared you with Booker Little or Lee Morgan. So that competition kind of kept me going, you know? I mean, it made me strive to play better than I would normally.
What was the high point for you?
The high point, I would say, is when I was with CTI Records.
Creed Taylor.
And he had some ideas for me that really catapulted my career. And he got me a Grammy. I think I won a Grammy before Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie. 1972? Long time ago. Not that I thought I didn't deserve it, but not before a lot of the guys who hadn't received one who were great, but
yeah, that was Red Clay, First Light.
Yeah, that was before I did that song, Creed said, "Man, right ahead." That's I said, "Oh, sure, here we go." Because I commercialism never really fazed me. I mean, playing songs and licks that you knew everybody would like. I always wanted to be a true jazz artist, you know. Like Creed said, "Right ahead." So I wrote Red Clay. And all my friends who were jazz musicians, they said, "Man, you writing that square stuff." So it kind of, but that tune has earned me a living.
That's a great tune.
I mean, and it reminded me of my early childhood when I was back in Indianapolis.
They have Red Clay in Indiana?
No, because the guys used to sit on the porch and play their guitars and and they would beat the tap the foot. So I kind of adopted that dun 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 dun. I mean, because my people, my relatives, most of them are from Jackson, Mississippi. So when they migrated to Indianapolis, they kind of brought a lot of that feeling. When he said write a hit, that one song, man. People know me all over the world behind that. Russia, Africa, Japan, all over the world. But people, first thing they say when they see me, Red Clay.
In the course of your career, you've had obviously highs and you've had some lows, mm-hmm. and they've been described as personal problems without going into detail. Are we to assume that those problems were substance abuse related?
Well, substance abuse, I wouldn't really say I had a problem with that. I mean, I would say that at one period in the 70s, I started partying. I was in Hollywood Hills, and everybody would come up there. I mean, all kind of movie stars, all kind of football stars, basketball stars, actors. And I had a spot right there on Mulholland overlooking the bowl, Hollywood Bowl. And the people that I had coming up there, now, the substance abuse, it was around, because a lot of people who would come to see me would bring it. But I would never really say I had a habit or anything like that. I had more of a drinking thing. I started drinking that Jack Daniels and Coca-Cola. And it tore my stomach up, so that was one period I wish I could forget. But, you know, when you're partying and you're young and you're making a little money and you're just having fun, and you can overdo it.
You mentioned David Weiss. He was quoted as saying something, and I want to know if it really is true that he said it and how you feel about it. He called you, quote, the Barry Bonds of jazz. Did he do that?
I don't think, if he does, I'm going to smack him.
I was like, what? I'm not sure what he meant by that.
Did he say that?
Yeah, well, that's the quote. The context of it was that people were putting off on you or putting responsibility on you for things that other musicians were doing when it came to substance abuse or drugs or problems or whatever sort of thing is. He said, everybody wants to sort of put this off on Freddie. He's the Barry Bonds of jazz.
Yeah, well, like a lot of people, I think, are kind of envious of me in that they can't play a lot of stuff that I played, but yet they don't want to admit it. Now, whatever reason that they dislike me, it has nothing to do with what I played. See, no matter what you say about Charlie Parker, he still created that. Now, maybe because of the substance abuse or whatever, because in the past, I used to wouldn't take any stuff from a lot of people. And I would open my mouth sometimes and say some things to some people that I was believing it was right. But there's a certain way you have to do things and say things to people for them to give you the respect. When it comes time for people, they may say some things about me that maybe I did do some of those things. So that determines their outlook on me.
When you have those moments when you are alone at home in your car, wherever, the backyard, and you sit back and you look back over your career, does a smile come to your face?
You know what? At one time they were talking about he's the greatest drummer player in the world. I mean, I don't believe that because no one person is the greatest drummer player. But when I think I can be put in the same sentence with Miles or Dizzy or Clifford Brown, or, I mean, anywhere in there, you realize how many trumpet players are in the world, and to be accepted all over the world as contributing something to this music that maybe nobody else could play or they like it, a smile comes to my face.
That was my conversation with jazz great Freddie Hubbard that was conducted before he passed away on December 29th last year. That's our show for today. Glad you could join us. To listen to the show or subscribe to the podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Tomorrow, Eric Holder is sworn in as the first black attorney general, while Tom Daschle withdraws from his nomination as Secretary of Health and Human Services. We'll size up President Obama's still developing cabinet. I'm Tony Cox. This is News and Notes.